left corner to Aginla. Aginla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aginla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, it is a Friday. Happy Friday. October 25th is our date on this Friday, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And because it's Friday, it's time for the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly. And we've got lots to talk about over the next hour here with Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. He joins us now for the next hour. Hello, EF. What's going on?
I'm all good, my man. Love Fridays. Love our chat. And I love when there's lots to talk about. We always find something good to talk about, lots of good things to talk about. But it's funny, when that game ended last night, I was joking with my colleague in Edmonton. I said, look, I actually forgot what it's like to write a losing game column. Can you help me out? Can you remind me how that works? A little dig in Edmonton. It's okay. It was, he took it with a smile, but yeah, that's the kind of the first setback obviously they've had all year. And it felt kind of strange. I'm not sure I expected it to feel strange, but I think a lot of people expected that might be the game that would be the one they would lose. But anyway, there we go. It was a pretty good effort for the second half anyway.
Well, and we've got, I mean, there's a lot to talk about with the game on Thursday and the stretch coming up. And also, like, I don't know, 7 games into a season, Eric, did we expect roster decisions to be as difficult as they are already? I mean, they've already made one really difficult roster decision earlier on this Friday by sending Matt Coronato to the American League. They've got Sharon Govich and Hanzek, who are both knocking on the door, ready to return. You don't make a move like sending Coronato to the AHL unless one or both of those guys are imminently ready to return, whether it's Saturday or they hold off until the road trip on Monday. But, you know, that move, sending Coronato to the AHL, like we've been talking about and kind of forecasting, okay, when do they have to make this tough decision and what tough decision are they going to make? And EF, I don't think that sending Coronato to the American League was an easy decision at all, because on merit, I think he was far, far more deserving of staying this time around than a year ago when they sent him to the Wranglers. But they need him playing. He's a young player, so he doesn't have waiver eligibility. They can send him freely to the AHL right now. They've got guys who are ready to return. They've got a depth chart that's a little clogged up. Like, there's tough decision number one, and that they've probably got another one coming here in the very near future too.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked a little bit on the TV broadcast last night that these decisions were coming. And to me, I don't want to say easy, but I because nobody deserves to go down, I guess is the way I would put it. No one has faltered to the point where, okay, we saw what we need to see. They're probably better suited for the AHL. Like, I think a case could have easily been made, of course, for Coronato to stay here, because what I liked about what I thought he did, and I still think consistency issues are plaguing him to some degree, and the reason why it was the easiest decision of the two they've got to make here. But what I think they saw, and we all saw, was the fact that I think you could be just as comfortable starting him, you know, in a top six role as you could on the bottom six. And I'm not sure we thought that before. I think before the season started, we always said Coronato can't play on the fourth line. Like, it's not designed for him. It's not the way he plays. But I thought he played very well on the fourth line. Actually, I think he played his best hockey with the Flames on the fourth line. So, you know, I think that he's added some versatility to his game in that regard, which bodes well for him coming back up, you know, sooner rather than later. So progress was made. I thought he showed himself well on a lot of nights, but it's a numbers game, and, you know, you're not sending Sharon Govich down, and you don't want to send any of the veterans down who've got to clear waivers, especially with a roster that just won, you know, that got 11 out of its first 12 points. So it really, the next decision comes down to, and I'm interested in your thoughts too, but, you know, to me, I don't know if there's a debate still over whether or not they might send Hanzek down. I can see that argument, but I think that, again, he hasn't played his way off the roster, and they liked all the things he was bringing while he was healthy. So I think that Klapka goes down, and I think Hanzek stays, but I could also see a scenario where if Hanzek isn't being an impact player two, three, four games in, then I think that they make another change and put Hanzek down and play him in the minors, which was the plan all along to start the season. And I don't think it's going to hurt the kid long term. What are your thoughts in terms of the next move? To me, it's always been clear that it's going to be Coronado and Klapka. And again, I think Klapka is a fantastic ingredient, but they love that Klapka option so much, especially in big, heavy games, that maybe they are considering putting Hanzek down. I don't think so, but it's got to be a discussion they're having. Who would you put down?
It's so fascinating because, you know, you've got this Coronado decision they make today, and you're right. Like, I don't think on merit he, quote-unquote, deserves to go down. I really don't. I actually think that he has performed quite well for the most part in his five games. You take a look at some of the underlying metrics and, you know, the scoring chances when he's been on the ice and the shots and attempts. And I think Coronado I've quite liked his game, but the organization, I think this is all about playing time. And the message is, you know, if he's going to all of a sudden find himself in that fourth line platoon role, you'd rather have him playing 17, 19, 20 minutes with the Wranglers than playing, you know, 9 minutes with the Flames and then sometimes sitting as a healthy scratch when they need to put Klapka in, when they feel like they feel like they need a heavier presence on their fourth line or whatever. And so, you know, I get it. If Coronado's pissed, if Coronado's upset, you fully get it, and you hope that he is, and you hope he goes down and shows it in the American League and takes out his frustrations on the Colorado Eagles or whoever they're going to play going forward. So I think that is the first tough decision they've made, and you're right, this next one isn't easy either because, okay, let's say it's Sharon Govich who comes back for Saturday and you've got your decision made there. You can activate Sharon Govich off of IR and you're at 23, but what about Hanzek? And you've got to make another decision there. And I'm with you. I don't think prior to the hit, Hanzek had played himself off the roster. I actually thought Hanzek had done some good things and he hadn't recorded his first NHL point yet, but I think that he's a guy that has shown that he can very, very easily stay in the NHL. But who do you then send down? Is it Klapka because he's not waiver eligible? Is it Kirkland? Or do you now all of a sudden, I don't think it should be Kirkland, by the way. I'm just throwing out guys who would not need to clear waivers right now. And then you've got like, okay, is it Rooney? Is it Hanley? Even though they don't want to have another veteran D-man down there. That becomes really, really difficult. So my answer to you, if it were me, and they wanted to go Hanzek back into the NHL roster, which I think right now they should, because I'm with you. I don't think he played himself off. I think I'd go Klapka is the way I would go. Yeah. It's the easy move because he's waiver exempt, but I think that's probably the way I would go in the immediacy, see how Hanzek plays, and then you can reevaluate in a week or two's time.
100%. I mean, that's the way I've always kind of thought it would play out. When I say always, I'm lying. Let's be honest. A week and a half ago, nobody thought there was a chance that Kirkland would stay up when they had to make these sort of tough decisions. But given the week he's had, the emotional, I want to say emotional leader he's been, like, maybe leader's not the word, but look, his story is the best story of the season for the Calgary Flames, and I dare say one of the better stories in the NHL this year. Now, you don't keep someone up just because it's a good story, but you keep someone up based on merit, slash, you know, what else he can do in terms of intangibles for your team. And every guy in that room absolutely loves him, his story, his perseverance. Everything about his story has been something that, you know, Flames fans would love. You know, listen, there's not going to be a mutiny from the city if they send him down, but it just seems like, you know, they just moved him up in the lineup. And he was 4-13 in the faceoff circle last night. Mm-hmm. If there's one reason why they may end up sending Kirkland down, that might be it. I mean, when you're trying to split hairs here and try to decide who, you know, who's best to keep up here. This team was very badly hurt last night by their lack of ability in this face-off circle.
Big time.
It was a huge reason why they lost the game and lost, you know, the possession numbers, everything about it. It all started with losing. What'd they lose? 80% of the face-off? Something outrageous. I can't remember
in the first, they ended up at 42% when it was all said and done.
Oh, okay, yeah, I got it.
But
it was
20% or Carolina was at 80% after 20 minutes in the first period.
It was
80% Carolina. Yep.
And listen, you'll never hear me talk about faceoffs because I argue with all of our colleagues all the time that I think it might be one of the more meaningless stats. I mean, it's a coin flip every time they drop the puck, and roughly 50% of the time you win and roughly 50% of the time you lose. Like the really, really good faceoff men are like what? 58-60%. Like, we are splitting hairs here. So I think it's one of the most overrated stats in hockey, so I don't get too bent out of shape of it. But when you lose a game because two goals came right off of a faceoff and, you know, you lost all, you know, 60% of all your faceoffs all night as a team, that's a bit of a problem that they have to address. And this goes back a little bit to what Craig Conroy was talking about, like needing another center. You know, I know on their checklist, you know, they want a right-handed player. They want him between 23 and 25. They want to have control of him, for several years. They want to be part of the future. They want to be good in the faceoff draw. Like, geez, they're looking for a unicorn right now. And that's probably why he hasn't pulled the trigger on anything or come close even. So, I guess another question as we talk about the possibility of Kirkland being on that list, and certainly they have to discuss whether or not he's one of those guys, and I certainly don't want him to be, but, you know, how badly do they need a center right now? Because I would say to you that the way that these five guys, you know, assuming Rooney comes back to being a pretty good, you know, fourth liner, you know, do you really need – it's always nice to have that depth, and they're an injury two away from them really needing some centers. But I don't know. I'm wondering if Craig's desire to get that center has increased over the last couple of weeks or decreased. What do you think?
I would suggest increased. And this is not a shot at Justin Kirkland at all. But the fact that Kirkland has been moved into an even higher spot in the lineup here in the last few games and the fact that they went away from Pospisil playing down the middle, I think further underlines the kind of organizational weakness at that spot right now. I think it's all if Pospisil, who I thought that line, Pospisil, Huberdeau, Mantha, outstanding in the first three games of the season, dropped off after that to the point that they moved Pospisil onto the Kadri line for the game against Carolina. The fact that to this point it hasn't worked out kind of like exactly the way they were hoping yet with Pospisil down the middle, I think it might, you know, ramp the urgency up a little bit because they love Zeri on that backline line. I don't think they're in love with Sharon Govich playing down the middle either if they don't have to have him down the middle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think, you know, whether it's a Shane Pinto or a Krebs or a McMichael or any of the other names that you could point to, I think a guy that you could fit in there who is more of a natural center, I think you're pretty okay with. But again, what you're looking for and what teams know that they're looking for this, teams know that they've got a little bit of a hole there. It's not like they're like, oh, yeah, guys are on sale. Come on, discount. Like, that's not going to happen. So you also have to do what's best for your big picture plan. But, yeah, I think it might, you know, even up the ante a little bit on how much they'd like to do that.
Yeah, it's been hanging around this organization since they lost Lindholm. So, you know, we talked about that last week. This is not a new story, but it's, and an injury can change so much so quickly. And especially when they've decided, look, I asked the coach, is the Pospisil experiment up the middle done? And he's, you know, by no means, he said, is it done? It just means that for tonight against Carolina, we want more speed. So with that in mind, it will be interesting to see how they set their lines, especially if Sharon Govich comes back. Isn't it amazing that the Calgary Flames have done what they've done?
Without their leading goal scorer?
Yeah, and they're about to add their leading goal scorer from last year. Like, it's pretty, and I'm not sitting here saying they're going to be even better now. But on paper, they certainly feel like they'll be even better. And they've got so many options in terms of wingers, centers, you know, as we just discussed, in terms of the depth. And it's really, it really will come down to, well, first of all, who's exempt from waivers is the biggest factor. But second of all, it's kind of like when you're piecing together a Team Canada. I'm not comparing them to Team Canada, but I'm saying you don't just pick, you know, the 12 best or 13 best forwards and the 7 best defensemen. It's not an all-star game. You're trying to find niches. You're trying to find roles that guys will play. And, you know, that's where I think they'd love to keep a guy like Kapka so much, because he's such a unicorn out there. But I just don't know if they can. So anyway, we'll find out. What's your guess on when they'll make that second move? Because I think it's going to be Sunday or Monday ahead of that game in Vegas when both those guys are officially back in the lineup.
Yeah, like I think there's a pretty good chance we see one of them on Saturday. Yeah. And then the only thing is again, like, I don't think Hanzek should go down, but I wonder where the organization is, because, like, he took an absolute belt in that game against Chicago. Connor Murphy got him good, and it wasn't like it was a predatory or it was a bad hit. That was Hanzek going to make contact with the player, and then he ran into, like, NHL man strength and all of a sudden got put on the shelf. And so, you know, Hanzek, who has dealt with injuries over the last couple of years, had his first season in the organization really, I don't think completely wiped out, but definitely messed with because of injury. How much are you concerned if you're the Flames about, okay, is the highest level with these elite athletes at peak form in an extremely physical sport? How much do you factor that in when it comes to, hey, Sam's still getting there. He's still 19. He's still working on getting to that NHL man strength, right? Like, I wonder how much that plays into their thought process. If it's me, on merit, I think Hanzek should come back and play in the NHL. I really do, at least to start, evaluate through a few games. Then you can make a decision as to whether or not the American League is the way to go. There's still that kind of unicorn is the wrong word, but that very important 10-game mark, which will determine if he gets an entry-level slide or not. But I think coming back with Hanzek in the NHL would be the way to go, because he earned his spot. I don't think he played himself out of his spot before the injury. So bring him back in, see where he is. But I do think the physical side of things is a really interesting conversation when it comes to him.
It was interesting when he got rocked there. I watched that entire shift, and he went back to the bench and he smashed his stick on the dasher. He was really angry, and I don't sense that he was angry at Connor Murphy for hitting him. I sense he was mad that he allowed himself to be vulnerable enough to take a hit that hard. It also may be frustration because he knew he'd hurt himself, and he's like, oh, man.
Again, here we go again.
I'm out again. Yeah, so we can read into that whatever we want, and whenever we hear from him on, say, Monday when I'm in Vegas, you know, that'll be interesting. But I'm with you. I think, listen, we're talking about keeping him, but it doesn't mean he's going to be in the lineup, right? I mean, one of these guys that we're talking about keeping is going to have to stay as a 13th forward. So, again, that could be Rooney. That, you know, that's probably the easy decision. Rooney goes to the 13th forward. Kirkland goes down to the fourth line. I don't know. It's a shell game, and we're probably getting a little too inside baseball here. But I do think Hanzek deserves to come back and give it another go. But I think he'd be on significant, for lack of a better term, probation. Like, let's watch him very closely. Yeah. You know, there's so many guys, to be honest, that are on this team that are on probation. That's just part of being a young guy breaking into the league. Like, Coronado was on probation. So it's the wrong word. But you know what I'm saying? They're going to monitor him closely. And if 3, 4, 5 games in, they don't feel like Hanzek has kept up the level that he had in the preseason, or, you know, the big boy hockey's kind of caught up to him and he's not quite ready, I'm 100% with you. Hanzek will be down in the American Hockey League very quickly after they determine that. So I'm not saying that will be the case, but if that's what they see, what they feel, then I don't think nobody in this city could be mad if they decided that it was probably best for him to spend another whether it's 2 weeks or the entire year in the American Hockey League, long-term, that's what it's all about here in Calgary.
And as you said earlier, that was the original plan. Like they went into this year thinking that, geez, we're going to get to have Sam some huge playing time in the American League because he's finally eligible to play there. And then he blew the doors off at training camp. Like they weren't expecting that. So the original plan, the original thought process was like, okay, let's give him lots of preseason games and then send him to Trent Cull's team and let him develop under Cull in that Wranglers group. And Trent can give him all kinds of power play time, all kinds of top 6 minutes. So Sam altered that plan with his training camp, right?
Yeah. He forced them, you know, and it was important to me for the organization to start the season with him because you promise these guys if they make it hard and they force their way onto the team that they'll find a way to keep them there. And that can't be a hollow promise. That's got to be something you follow through on. And they did. And they've done it in the past, and they've got to keep doing it moving forward. They did it with Coronado last year to at least start the season. And I don't think anybody would be surprised if Hanzek's season ends up going exactly the way Coronado's did last year. You know, he started with the team, earned it through camp, had a great camp, maybe one of the best players on the team in camp. Both those guys, I could say that about in the last two training camps. Then you know, Coronado went down last year and it was kind of back and forth all season long. But generally speaking, grew his game because he spent a lot of good chunk playing big minutes in the AHL.
Yeah.
Same thing with Hanzek. If he ended up spending the bulk of his season in the AHL, I do think long term that would probably serve him best.
Well, I think it's a really interesting dilemma that they've or decision that they've got to make. And the other thing that goes into it, Eric, is that they're also getting into the toughest stretch yet of their schedule. So they play Carolina Thursday, and the Hurricanes beat them in regulation for the first time. Now they've got Winnipeg, who just happened to be the only unbeaten team in the NHL still. Then they're into Vegas, and we all know how difficult Vegas has been to play in for this team. Utah is no slouch to start this season. Then Jacob Markstrom and the Devils are in here a week from when we're talking right now. So this five-game stretch they're in the middle of is the toughest stretch they've played so far, whereas the first seven games outside of Carolina. And I do think Edmonton is, I mean, that's their defending Western Conference champions, and the Flames went in there and really, really played them well and were full marks for that victory. But, you know, there's a Chicago in there. There's a Philly in there. There's a pretty dreadful defensive Pittsburgh team. The schedule not as strong as the stretch that they're in right now, which is also interesting when it comes to making some of these roster decisions.
100%. And I'll go one further. After they play New Jersey a week from Friday, they're playing Edmonton.
That's right. That's right.
It gets tough now. And in retrospect, listen, full marks again for going 5-0-1. But that lineup was, you know, as you just rattled through, there were a lot of weak sisters in there. So, listen, this team, I think one thing that the coach kind of suggested last night, and I was talking to Kelly Rudy during the morning skate about it, was the last couple games, the team really hasn't been as good. Like, their play has started to slide somewhat against Pittsburgh. And then, of course, last night against Carolina, for the first half of the game, they were, it was embarrassing almost. You know, without Vladar standing on his head, that could have been 6-7-0. So, you know, the trend is not where the coaching staff would like it to be. So maybe that's the perfect time to inject some new life, like a guy like Sharon Govich in there. And I think that'll be a huge, you know, welcome addition for the team. You know, again, I don't know if we'll see it Saturday, but obviously that roster move today certainly tells you that it's probably going to happen. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they slot him in. Any guess on where? Look, again, I don't want to get into the weeds on that, but have you thought about where you put Sharon Govich in this lineup?
Yeah. I'm thinking to myself, do you put him where he played for most of training camp with Kadri and Kuzmenko? And have they not moved Pospisil away from center? I would have said, yeah, for sure. But then Pospisil goes onto the Kadri line against Carolina, and that line was their best line. No questions asked in my mind. It was the only line who did anything in that dreadful first period. And I thought the Kadri line with Pospisil, with Kuzmenko, was the catalyst for them getting back in that game against the Hurricanes. So you're like, well, do you want to take Pospisil off now after they were their best line on Thursday? So then you're like, okay, well, do you want to put Sharangovich there, or do you slide Sharangovich in between Huberdeau and Mantha? Because you have got to get those two guys going again. Their game has fallen off big time from the first three. That would then put Kirkland back on a line where he's had a whole lot of success. Him and Lomberg have been a real nice combo, and whether it's been Klapka or Coronado on the right side, that line's been good. So maybe, as much as I am not an advocate of Sharangovich as a long-term center on this team, maybe for the time being, you put him back in between Huberdeau and Mantha, see if that can get those two guys going again. So yeah, I've thought a lot about where you put Sharangovich back in.
I put Sharangovich back on the wing, and I move Pospisil back in the middle again.
Yeah,
that's what
you keep that. But, you keep that experiment with. I don't mind that either, because I still think there's a lot of merit to keeping the Pospisil experiment going. Like, I don't. There's not an easy one, but I don't know if there's a bad choice either.
Yeah, no, and we can sit here and split hairs, but it, bringing Sharangovich back after what last 2.5 or 3 weeks off. I think the last thing you want to do is complicate it by making him play up the middle with all the added responsibilities.
That's and really fair.
And weight on his shoulders. So I think you make it easier. A rare good point. There you go. You put him on the wing where he's most comfortable, and it's a very simple up and down and up, down, snipe. That's the way they'd like it to be. Sure, it won't be that easy, but, anyway, it'll be interesting because there's no morning skate tomorrow because it's an early game. So we're just going to see them roll out about 4:30 tomorrow, and we'll all be fascinated to see what lines are out there. And you know what? You are the line king, not the lion king, the line king. And, it's funny how that has become such a thing in the NHL. I think because everybody's in pools. I think, people are always so fast at who's playing with who.
Yeah.
You send out the lines every morning. I send them out sporadically every once in a while, or just retweet yours. But every day they change. It does spark quite a lot of discourse with the diehards. And that's not something that we've seen in the NHL, I'd say, 2-3 years ago. I think this is a relatively new thing, in my eyes anyway, with social media, everybody knows within minutes who's playing with who that night, and kind of adds an interesting new wrinkle and gives us lots to talk about too.
For sure. Well, which makes it even more interesting at practice, because both Sharangovich and Hanzek were skating on a line with Coronado, and neither Sharangovich nor Hanzek got any power play work. So that also is interesting, because Looks like Mr. Huska's doing his best not to tip his hand as to who might be coming back in against Winnipeg. So Husk is as aware as you and I are about how immediate all information is on social media, and anytime there's a change, somebody's going to see it and it's going to get out there. So a little bit of perhaps some sleight of hand in terms, or maybe they just haven't decided how they want to go as of yet. Although I lean more towards a little bit of just trying to keep it close to the vest.
Yeah, I was thinking that what it meant by them all playing on the fifth line today was that, okay, well,
ready.
It's obvious that none of them are going to play on Saturday, and that's okay. But then when they made the roster move today, I thought, oh, okay, well, that's clearly with an eye on somebody coming back on Saturday. So anyway, we'll see. Can't wait to get back in there, watch more hockey, and then jump on that bird. I never mind going to Vegas, and then I go a little culture shock, go from Vegas to Utah. Talk about extremes in America. It'll be interesting.
I'm quite excited for your Utah report after you're there on Wednesday and what that building is like when it's all said and done. So I'm curious about that. I think we'll have a much better idea as to what this Flames group is all about when they're back from a quick little two-game road trip as well. Okay, Eric Francis Hour is underway. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. My name is Pat Steinberg. The Eric Francis Hour brought to you, as always, by Horse Racing Alberta. Live Thoroughbred Racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.
This is Flames Talk.
More on the EF Hour when we come back. Hitman Hockey at the top of the hour. It's Flames Talk on a Friday. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Eric Francis Hour on this Friday. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. You can find him on Twitter, funny enough, at Eric Francis. Pat Steinberg along with you too on Flames Talk this hour. Mr. Francis, couple of really good articles, couple of really good conversations you had. I mean, there was the chat you had with Craig Conroy this week, the general manager, talking about the search for an NHL center, and that's still very much, like, as we've talked about, their search for a center or their desire to potentially acquire another center. That was there in the summertime. That was there in training camp. And now that we're a few weeks into the season, it's still there now. They definitely would like to acquire a young NHL center who they could grow with and that would fit their overall blueprint. And as you laid out really clearly, and I think, you know, has been important to continue underlining, they're not deviating from their plan here. This is not a change in course. Them being interested in a center has always been a part of the blueprint.
Yep, absolutely. And the Elias Lindholm was a big, big loss. Everybody knows that. It's better that the guys who don't want to be here are not here. That's not the point. The point is, you needed to try to fill those shoes. You knew you weren't going to be able to. I mean, is he a top 20 center in the NHL? Here's what I'd describe him: top 15, 200-foot center in the NHL. That's for sure. Like, he's one of the better ones there. But either way, yeah, they're looking for a center, and it was good. Conroy, I didn't need him to say to me that nothing has changed, but he did reiterate that. And I think it would be foolish to say that no matter what, nothing changes. Like, this season is going to play out the way it's going to play out. And as come trade deadline, I think you have a fresh new set of discussions on whatever your attack is going to be. I don't think they know in stone right now how they're going to approach the trade deadline. Do you? I still think some of it could be subject to how the season goes. Injuries, placed in the standings, developments with youngsters. Right. I mean, I do think that's something that has to be fluid. You can't just decide before the season starts 100% that this guy will be traded at the deadline and these guys, you know, won't be.
No. And I think that's fair. The only thing that I would say is that I don't think that one thing that I'm very confident in and one thing that I know to be true is that this group is not ready to deviate significantly from what they've put in place. In that, you know, 10 years ago when they had that crazy year and made the playoffs, you know, they all of a sudden, I think there was a shift and they did deviate from the rebuild they were on, right? Or the retool they were on, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, a few months after, 2 months after that season ended and they lost to Anaheim in round two, they had just traded away a first-round pick for Dougie Hamilton. And then they were trading away first-round picks and second-round picks for Brian Elliott and Travis Hamonic, so on and so forth. That is what I don't think is going to change. I don't think all of a sudden the Flames are going into buying mode. And now, oh, you know what? Well, first-round picks? I don't know. We need to make this team better right now. I don't think changes is the 3 to 5 year plan. What I don't think changes is the focus on the big picture. And I don't think at any point they all of a sudden divert from where they're going and divert from the, for so long we've covered this team, EF, and it's been all about trying to make the team as good as possible right now and as competitive as possible in that very, very small, small picture to make the playoffs that one year. That's been the focus for so long. That is what I don't think they're going to be going back to in the next few years here. And even if they continue to have quote-unquote surprising success, I'm quite confident that that part of things doesn't change.
I would like to say that I do believe that they won't, they're not interested in rentals, like along with what you're saying. Like, there's no way that they would be at the trade deadline and grab someone who's just here for the playoffs or the playoff run or whatever. But again, I just want to say, like, you know, you get a major injury to somebody and it could change a lot of different things. So I'm not, the plan is to not go out and get a rental. Craig said that, like, in terms of getting a center. No, we're not bringing in a rental, you know, for a first rounder or anything like that, or a guy who's only here for 1 or 2 years. But, you know, I do think there would be a hue and cry if they went out and got a rental or a guy with an expiring contract. But, and I know that's not the plan, but I do know that just talking to management types, you know, you can't ever say never on anything, right? Mm-hmm. You just never know. So, but yeah, long-term, the plan is, of course, with an eye on 3 to 5 years from now, whatever the case may be.
Tell us about your chat with Kevin Rooney prior to the game on Thursday. He got back into the lineup for the first time since taking that hit from JT Miller in the season opener in Vancouver. Tell us about that chat with Kevin Rooney.
Well, he'd mentioned to me when I saw him in the dressing room, I don't know, 4 or 5 days earlier, that I was asking how he is. You know, he's one of the nicest guys in that room. And, you know, I always enjoy chatting with him. And everybody loves Kevin Rooney. And he just mentioned to me that JT Miller had sent him a long text after the hit. And, you know, for those who don't remember, opening night, I think a lot of people remember Kevin Rooney lying there in a very scary prone position. One of those scary moments in sports nobody likes to see for a couple minutes. And, you know, there wasn't even a penalty assessed on the play. Some people thought it was a dirty bit of a reverse hit. And I looked at the video again today when I was writing this column. And, you know, Rooney didn't have the puck. He just missed it. He almost had it. He should have had it. But by then it was too late. Miller had lined him up in his crosshairs. And Miller wanted to reach out and just kind of apologize and kind of also explain where he's from, but also express to him that he has a lot of respect for Kevin Rooney. They go back many years. Rooney said that they used to battle quite a bit when Rooney played out east with New Jersey. And JT Miller, of course, was with the Rangers. And he said they had a lot of great battles going back there. They're both Americans, you know. So he said it was a really nice email, and it meant a lot that he took the time not only to apologize but to also explain his side of it and explain, look, I certainly didn't mean to hurt you. I hope you're okay. And I just think that this is not the first time this has ever happened. I know that, but I think it's nice to be reminded that these guys are people first and hockey players second. And you hurt someone, and I think anybody would feel awful about it, especially when you don't know how badly hurt he is in the split second afterwards. I just thought it was a really interesting exchange, and I know it meant a ton to Rooney. And I reached out to Miller. I got some quotes from Miller, and he just said, look, I don't want to hurt anybody in hockey, and I just wanted to make sure he was okay and know that I wanted him to be okay. And the one thing that was funny, though, I said to Rooney, so apology accepted? And Kevin said, no, I don't think I said that. So I don't think you just ever say, yeah, no, that's cool. It was fine the way you hit me. He did say that he totally understood. It was because he was an awkward space away from the boards that he fell so awkwardly, neck and head first into the boards. If the boards aren't there, he just falls the ice and gets right back up, and we're not even having this conversation. Yeah. So
that's anyway, why, I didn't like the hit because of that, because of where it was. That's why I still am like, yeah, I didn't like the hit, because you got to be aware of where a guy is and the vulnerability of his spot on the ice. That's why I didn't like the hit, because He didn't have the puck, and he wasn't expecting to get hit, and he was in that awkward position in that kind of no man's land near the boards. That's why I was like, I don't think the JT ever meant to hurt him. I just thought it was still a bit of a reckless play because of that and because of all the circumstances involved. And I know it's a lot to suggest that you can factor all that in and process all that at the speed the NHL goes at these days. I do grant you that. That's just why I've always felt like, yeah, it was a questionable hit, borderline hit for me.
Fair enough. It was, if I said predatory, that would be way over the top.
Yeah, I agree.
It was with an intent to like, oh, look at this guy, so vulnerable and juicy right here. Boom. It's opening night. You're in, you know, JT Miller's in his own barn. He's a cult hero there. You know, there's a lot of excitement. The score's still 0-0. The pace is fast for the first time, you know, since last playoffs. Like, and so I get that Miller would maybe err on the side of being overly aggressive to get a rise out of the crowd, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Rooney said, hey, it was my second shift of the year, and I rarely let myself be vulnerable like I did right there. But I think, again, second shift of the entire season, like, I think I just wasn't, in my head, wasn't 100% into being ready for a hit like that. And a little bit of that he felt like was on him. But at the end of the day, I like to see a classy gesture like that where someone just, right or wrong, sends an email, whether he deserved an apology or not, just send a note saying, hey, man, I'm a human being and I'm thinking of you and I want you to know that this is where my head's at. I am waiting, however, for the 18,000 people who were chanting JT Miller's name while a stretcher was being rolled out for a guy who'd clearly been knocked unconscious. I'm waiting for those 18,000 Vancouver fans to send their text of, you know, their apology of sorts to Kevin Rooney. I guess they're just waiting for his phone number so that they know where to send the text. Is that where I'm at with that?
Are you holding your breath on that one?
Yeah, I'll sit and wait because the Vancouver fan base is known to always do the right thing, right? And to never overreact or do silly things. So anyway, I'm not going to poke the bear. I'm scared of that fan base, to be quite frank. They're that crazy. I poke the bear gently, just a little bit. It's old news. It's 3 weeks old, so hopefully they don't go too crazy on me.
It's like a 10-foot pole is what you're poking with. I see what you're doing. Are you done writing about Justin Kirkland?
No, I don't want to be. I had a long conversation with his mom, his dad, and his wife last night before the game. They're all sitting there with their Kirkland signature.
Kirkland signature, baby.
So great. You know, they were joking to me about, oh yeah, we're hoping, you know, with what Justin's doing, maybe they'll give us a Costco. That was one of the jokes the dad said. You know, like they are big. So everybody knows they're big fans of the Kirkland brand. That's not a facade. This is not just a coincidence. They love the Kirkland brand.
It's great.
They
brand.
Do shop at Costco. Oh, fantastic. You always know what you're getting and at a reasonable price. And anyway, lovely chat with all three of them. His wife is absolutely delightful from England, thick British accent. They met 10 years ago online while he was in Kelowna playing for Huska in junior. Crazy story, wild. Anyway, I have some stories from them I still need to get out. But if my editor sees that I'm writing about Kirkland one more time, he's going to lose his mind, I think. So it might be a while, but I'm hoping to bust out some more Kirkland stories real soon because they are just such a delight. And again, can you really have too much of a good thing? I don't know. It's such a great story. Well, and a really neat family.
You always have your outlet on Fridays with me because, you know, it's a lot of the times when you're writing for sportsnet.ca, you're writing for a national audience. I know when I fill in the blanks for you over there every little once in a while, it's always like, okay, you're writing for a national audience. You may have to like explain some things that obviously are you don't need, like Flames fans know all these things, but you know, you maybe need to add a little bit more context that a Flames fan wouldn't need, but because you're on a national website, maybe you need to add a little bit more just because of that. So I get it that maybe the fourth line player isn't the national headline all the time, but on this program, which is for Flames fans and Flames fans only, we can talk as much Justin Kirkland as you want, okay?
Okay, good. Well, then I'm going to tell you a few more things about the Kirkland family. I was curious. Look, for a guy who's played over 400 games in the American Hockey League, the question begs. There had to have been moments when mom, dad, or his wife have had conversations with him where they or he has said, maybe I need to move on. Like, maybe this NHL dream is not going to happen. And they, all three of them, unequivocally said, never. Not once was it ever even suggested, nor would we ever dare bring that up. However, the car accident that he was in, that I think people, you know, I know I've written about it several times, you know, where he almost died. His wife kind of got all serious when we were talking about it. And she said, like, that was the only time when, like, I wasn't sure he was going to live. As a matter of fact, she thought at one point he was dead. And that's how close he came. You know, he had severe head injuries, facial fractures, all sorts of stuff that he doesn't really want to get into.
Yeah.
But suffice it to say, you know, when you get into an accident on a California highway going across four lanes of traffic at a high rate of speed and waking up unconscious in an ambulance, there was probably a pretty good chance that you might have not made it. And she said that was obviously a very scary time. And they were wondering at that point, the first step, of course, for the first little while was, is he going to live? Second is, you know, how's his life going to be moving forward? And then it was, you know, long after that, they started wondering, can he ever play hockey again? So just an incredible, you know, triumphant story, and all the more reason why nobody wants to see him be the guy who's demoted, as we talked about earlier. You know, is he going to be the odd man out? I think Kirkland's going to go back to the minors, albeit temporarily, perhaps. But it's one of those great stories that nobody wants to end anytime soon. And if he keeps doing what he's doing, then it won't end anytime soon. And that's the good news. Yeah. So yeah, real nice family and real nice sweatshirts. I got to go get me a Kirkland signature sweatshirt with the, you know, it says it right on the front. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of the Kirkland brands, they don't have their logo anywhere. Yeah. That's part of the beauty of it. It's just subtly good, solid quality work. But they were loud and proud on it. And did you see, I hope you saw, that as he walked into the arena yesterday, on the outside of his suit, he was wearing a Costco membership badge.
I did see that. Yeah, it was great.
A big, gaudy, beautiful Costco membership badge that he had clipped to the pocket of his suit when he walked in. Like, talk about a guy who's just enjoying every minute of this ride. Yep. So great.
Yeah, and that's what makes it even better, because he's just been so straight up genuine about the whole thing. And you know, like, you're like, act like you've been there before, but I kind of like that he's acting like he hasn't been there before, and how special this is that he is here and all that type of stuff. Like, there's something really genuine about that, which I think has been awesome too. All of that is over at sportsnet.ca right now. And including the latest, which was a little earlier on this Friday, that some really, really cool storytelling on the Kevin Rooney, JT Miller conversation. Great stuff as always, EF. An absolute pleasure. We'll see you at the Dome on Saturday, man. Thanks for doing this.
Cheers, my man. Looking forward to it. We'll talk soon.
He's Eric Francis on Twitter at Eric Francis, Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. And this hour has been the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live Thoroughbred Racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.